Deuteronomy chapter 7. When the Lord your God brings you into the land you are entering to possess and drives out before you many nations, the Hittites, the Girgashites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, seven nations larger and stronger than you, and when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them and show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. And the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly destroy you. This is what you are to do to them. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, cut down their Asherah poles, and burn their idols in the fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you out of all the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. The Lord did not set his affections on you and choose you because you were more numerous than other peoples, for you were the fewest of all peoples. But it was because the Lord loved you and kept the oath he swore to your forefathers that he brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the land of slavery, from the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Know therefore that the Lord your God is God. He is the faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to a thousand generations of those who love him and keep his commands. But those who hate him, he will repay to face by destruction. He will not be slow to repay to their face those who hate him. Therefore, take care to follow the commands, decrees, and laws I give you today. If you pay attention to these laws and be careful to follow them, then the Lord your God will keep his covenant of love with you, as he swore to your forefathers. He will love you and bless you and increase your numbers. He will bless the fruit of your womb, the crops of your land, your grain, new wine and oil, the calves of your herds and lambs of your flocks, in the land that he swore to your forefathers to give you. You will be blessed more than any other people. None of your women or men will be childless, nor any of your livestock without young. The Lord will keep you free from every disease. He will not inflict on you the horrible diseases you knew in Egypt, but he will inflict them on all who hate you. You must destroy all the peoples the Lord your God gives over to you. Do not look on them with pity, and do not serve their gods, for that will be a snare to you. You may say to yourselves, "These nations are stronger than we are. How can we drive them out?" But do not be afraid of them. Remember well that the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt. You saw with your own eyes the great trials, miraculous signs and wonders, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm with which the Lord your God brought you out. The Lord your God will do the same to all the peoples you now fear. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet among them until even the survivors who hide from you will have perished. Do not be terrified by them, for the Lord your God, who is among you, is a great and awesome God. The Lord your God will drive out those nations before you little by little. You will not be allowed to eliminate them all at once, or the wild animals will multiply around you. But the Lord your God will deliver them over to you, throwing them into great confusion until they are destroyed. He will give their kings into your hand, and you will wipe out their names from under heaven. No one will be able to stand up against you. You will destroy them. The images of their gods you are to burn in the fire. Do not covet the silver and gold on them, and do not take it for yourselves, or you will be ensnared by it, for it is detestable to the Lord your God. Do not bring a detestable thing into your house, or you, like it, will be set apart for destruction. Utterly abhor and detest it, for it is set apart for destruction. chapter 8. Be careful to follow every command I am giving you today, so that you may live and increase and enter and possess the land that the Lord promised on oath to your forefathers. Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the desert these 40 years to humble you and to test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands. He humbled you, causing you to hunger and then feeding you with manna, which neither your forefathers or your fathers had known, to teach you that man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. Your clothes did not wear out and your feet did not swell during these 40 years. Know in your hearts that a man disciplines his son, so the Lord your God disciplines you. Observe the commands of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and revering him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land with streams and pools of water, with springs flowing in the valleys and hills, a land with wheat and barley, vines and fig trees, pomegranates, olive oil and honey, a land where bread will not be scarce and you will lack nothing, a land where the rocks are iron and you dig copper out of the hills. When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you today. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increases and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. He led you through the vast and dreadful desert, that thirsty and waterless land with its venomous snakes and scorpions. He brought you water out of hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the desert, something your forefathers had never known, to humble and to test you, that in the end it might go well with you. You may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands has produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your forefathers as it is today. If you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and worship and bow down to them, I testify against you today that you will surely be destroyed. Like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so you will be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God.
Okay, before we begin, what have we learned in the past few chapters? What's the main thing that Moses keeps bringing up?
Never to forget where we came from.
Okay.
Never forget what God has said in the commands, decrees, and laws he's passed along.
Statutes
and judgments. Never. This is what this book is all about, by the way. If you want to know what the book of Deuteronomy is, it's about statutes and judgments, okay? Because what happens when you do decide that you are going to keep the statutes and judgments?
You're accountable to them.
Huh?
You're accountable to them.
And there's a great, tremendous thing called you'll be called righteous. You'll be upright. You'll be the one that they will look to because you were a decent human being. Your focus is upon, we talked about why the between the eye is a focus. Your focus is the statutes and judgments. Why it's on your right hand, that's the work and performance, the things you do. Why is it on the doorpost?
Reminder.
For you?
For those who enter your house.
For those who enter into your house, they know that this house has the statutes and judgments of God, because that's what's supposed to be nailed to the post, not the one that they typically use. You will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. Okay? We went through that already. But basically, before he said that, remember there was chapter 4, chapter 5, and the beginning of chapter 6, it was statutes and judgments. The key thing. Now, here we're in chapter 7 and 8. And the theme basically is still, in a sense, the same thing. So we get a good, now as we go along, we'll find out some more of the statutes and judgments as we go along in the book of Deuteronomy, which involves the holy days. And those are called what?
Feasts.
Testimonies. Okay? Keep that in mind. When we keep the holy days, it's a testimony. It's testifying something to us. It's also testifying something to our neighbors. Our hands, when we do the testimony of the holy days, everybody sees and aware that yes, what you are doing. Why are you doing this for? Because you keep the statutes and the judgments of God. Now, what is a commandment? Okay, here, what? A statute is something that's carved.
It gives direction.
It's a direction. It's an order. The order is what? Thou shalt not have any other God. That's an order. Okay, that's just not a commandment of the law. That's a commandment. Out of his mouth, he gave you a command. And our job is to
obey.
And if we don't obey the command, what happens? We pay the consequences, right? Okay, like in the military, what happens if you don't obey the command that came out of his mouth? All of a sudden, we have, got to pay consequences. But we live by the statutes and the judgments, we will be called righteous. That's what we want to be, right?
Yes.
But we can't make ourselves righteous. We have to respond to and hear and pay attention. Now, before we begin, this very fact in here, chapter 7, verse 1, there's a perfect number. Did you notice it?
Seven.
A perfect number. And all of those nations are, of and by themselves, bigger, stronger, and mightier than Israel was. Right? Now, what does that tell you in a spiritual plane?
In the spirit of what?
What does that tell you on a spiritual plane?
On a spiritual plane.
It's not a matter of physical strength.
Okay.
Yeah, but a matter of God's strength.
Okay.
Not by might nor by power, but by the Spirit, saith the Lord.
Okay, simple words. That's right. Okay, now, have you ever in your life, Kelly?
It means that we're the eighth one.
How many times, now don't ask the question, I want you to put it in your mind to think about it. How many times has a trial, a difficulty, a handicap, something has stopped you from performing what God wants you to do? We're talking external, not internal. How many times have you ever done, you want to do what God wants you to do, right? But an external power, okay, external circumstances prevents you from doing it. Because you are weaker. You are not as strong. You're a grasshopper in comparison to that trial that's in the world.
Awesome.
Well, you know, I'm not telling you, don't write them down. I mean, don't speak about them, please. Just understand what this is kind of spiritual plane is, that yes, you're going to face as individuals, not only as a nation, a country, but as individuals, you're going to face trials and difficulties that are far greater than you. And what do you say about them? The Lord your God will deliver them, just like you said. So it means you have to have what?
Faith.
Faith, there you go. Simple as that. So simple words, right? Simple words. I have to have faith that God will deliver me out of this trial, out of this difficulty, out of the turmoil. I'm talking external. Okay? Some people say, well, the devil made me do it. No. That's external. If the devil made you do it, right? However, what does God say?
Greater.
Yeah, he's stronger than you, but I can deliver you out of it. Now, did God ever take anybody out of a trial?
No. Quite the opposite.
He lets them sit there for a while, doesn't he?
He puts them in.
Yeah, Joseph? I mean, look at him. I mean, a young man, 17 years old, what happened to him? External forces. I mean, how many times did they happen to him at least? We think 1, 2, 3, 4 times at least. It might be a lot more than that. We don't know. But just going to give you a picture that externally, and what did Joseph do? He had faith. All right. Now, first two, it's kind of like a touchy one to an awful lot of situations. Because some people have a belief that God is against I'm using this word now, with quotations, interracial marriages. Is that what this says?
No.
What does it say?
Intermarriage.
With?
These nations that are in there.
Under the not of God.
The not of God. Okay, gotta keep that part in mind. Remember, there's only one race. It's human. All right? There are no other races other than human when it comes to flesh and blood, right? We're all the same. So we're talking about here. Now, why would he want that to be prevented?
So there's not a bad seed.
That's what?
So a bad seed is not sown.
Right.
So there's a godly heritage.
What did he say what the sons would do?
They turn away from him.
The sons would turn away from. Now, in the Bible, what does it say?
Solomon.
Now, let's go to the New Testament for just a minute.
Don't be unequally yoked.
Don't be, yes.
What does light have with darkness?
That's correct. The same kind of, this is basically what's talking about. You know, you are the light of the world, Israel. As you walk across that sea, you walk across that river, and the New Jordan, across that, you are the light to the world. Now, when you get there, don't burn out. Remain lit. How do you remain lit? Don't mingle with that which is not lit. Okay? With the Spirit of God. Mainly. Or I would say more clearly with the statutes and the judgments. Okay? Statutes and judgments is the main key thing here in the book of Deuteronomy. And they're different than just commandments. We think of 113 commandments, right? 613, yeah. Commandments, remember, are things that come out of God's mouth and says, I command you to have no other God before me. What is a statute? What is a judgment? A statute is not a commandment. Statute is what? That which is written in stone. Okay. And what is judgment?
A decision.
Sorry, what?
A decision.
God's made a decision. And therefore, live by his decision. So when God makes a decision for you, remember God's decisions are always just. They're never unjust. Verse 5. Actually, I want to go to verse 6. No, verse 5 first. You shall utterly destroy all their altars and break down their sacred pillars and tear down the wooden images that some of your translations have it and do what with them?
Burn
them. Turn them into ash. Okay, spiritually speaking.
so they could never be resurrected.
Never be resurrected. Life is gone. It does no longer exist. It ceases to be. It's like ashes under. Now we have the Messiah, says his enemy will be ashes under his feet. So we have a parallel here that your enemy, in this case here, he's telling him, take the image of the power of that image, burn it, and it's all over with. Okay? I'm sorry, what?
Out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind, literally. That's true. I'm sorry, what?
That's for today, too, right?
That's for today, too. You've got to do that on today's basis in a spiritual point, too. How many times do we quote, I don't want to use this terminology, it's not really good, but yet in one way we have to face it. How many times do you put an idol in front of you and consider it? Oh, wait a minute now. We have this television program, it's called what?
American Idol.
That's right. And that's what we do, right? Now listen. Listen carefully what I'm saying to you. You can make a leader of a great nation or a leader of a powerful church the image. And if you don't destroy it, you don't physically destroy the person, if you don't destroy that image inside of you and make sure that that which is before you is the vision of the statutes and the judgments of the Creator God, you won't have an idol. You won't have that problem. And you look at his judgments. He's made a judgment, and you walk in those judgments. You live in those judgments. You do what his judgment says, and you won't have a problem. Anyway, you wind up destroying that idol that you have. Yes?
I think it's Revelations where it says worship the image of the beast or something like that.
Yeah, that's going into another spiritual concept, which I'm not. Revelation is not my job. It's going to be his job one of these days. He's down there. Oh, no. Yes. All right. Verse 6. Why? Why should you destroy images and idols?
Be holy as he's holy.
Because what?
Be holy as he's holy.
Because you are.
We are holy.
Okay, now listen carefully. In book of, it's either 1st or 2nd Corinthians, I don't know which one. But the Apostle Paul rattles off two baptized Christians. And he says, now listen, if you do, he named off several different kinds of sins and transgressions. What did he say if you do that? You will not be there. Bible doesn't talk, once saved, always saved. Neither does it follow through in the book of Deuteronomy. Because we follow through in this book of Deuteronomy, we find out, he says, if you forget the statutes and the judgments, you're out. All right. So we have a constant thing. Constant thing that we must monitor in our lives. Right?
Yes.
It's our job. It's not in fear, believe me not. It's your job to know, how am I walking? How am I living? What am I doing? You know. We look at our work. We look at our handiwork. We look at our job. We look at our family life. We look at everything we do, every aspect of it, and see if it falls within those statutes and judgments. Are the statutes and judgments unfair?
No.
They're just, they're holy, and they're good.
Right.
And so that way we want to go that way, right? Verse 7.
Richard?
Yes.
Just thinking about that, the whole question about whether, you know, the statutes, the judgments, and the commands of God are onerous or kind of against you, so to speak.
Right.
So it kind of makes me think of a passage from James chapter 1 about, starting in verse 23, and looking at the law, since he's supposed to write his law upon our hearts, it should be kind of like a mirror image of ourselves. He kind of compares it to, you know, it's like looking into a mirror and forgetting who you look, what you look like as you look away
from
the mirror.
As you look away from the mirror, right.
You know, so your life should always be a reflection of what you see in the mirror.
Always.
It should always be a reflection. And that's what the law's purpose is for.
And that's what the law
is. To show us who we really are.
Right. And we could change. And if you got a dirty face, guess what you got to
do? Wash it.
You got to clean it up. Right? But also, if you got a dirty mouth, you got to do what?
Brush your teeth.
Take your toothbrush and get it dumped on. May not like the soap, but, you know, at least you get the job done, okay? So you have to do some work in order to purify yourself. That's what we're supposed to do every day of our lives, right? Okay? We monitor our physical world, our physical flesh and blood. We need to monitor our spiritual world and our souls, our heart, and our mind. All right? That's a good point, though. The law of God should be a reflection of you. You ever thought about that? That's good, good analogy. Look at the statues and look at the judgments and say, oh, that's me!
It's what we measure ourselves against.
Yes, what you measure yourself against, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but
not others, just ourselves.
Exactly.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, I think this goes back to what Dave was reading about the spirit of truth, because Yeshua said, when I will send the spirit of truth, who will lead you into all truth. Oh. And in the Old Testament, it says, behold, I desire truth in the inward part.
Yes.
How do we know what truth is? This is what you're saying. It's the statutes and the rulings and the judgments.
The judgments.
Yes.
Because now we'll get into a little more here in detail about what man is all about in a minute. Verse 7, you are least amongst all the people. How important are you?
Very.
Correct, but not to the world. You're unimportant to the world, but you're very important to God. Because God calls the weak ones, the base ones, in order to do what? To what?
Yes, confound the wise.
To confound, to make them look like an idiot. Right, you'll think again. But that's the truth. He doesn't mean he's going to elevate you up above and make you look smart and clever and full of wisdom. It's not. That's not what it says. You're still the base. You're still the babes. You're still the lower one. You're not magnificent. You're not fantastic. But your life, as you live today, will and does confound those who are smarter than you. I mean, look at yourself now. You're sitting here listening to me. You can't be very bright. And the last part of this one I wanted to cover is that face-to-face. God says, I will repay. How do you want God to repay? He tells you how he's going to repay. If you hate him, despise him, don't have anything to do with him, he's going to confront you face-to-face. What do you think the result's going to be?
Yeah.
Well, we have in the call of the judgment seat.
Excuse Moses or different?
No, I'm talking just about God now, not Moses. Moses is telling what God said he's going to do, and that is he's going to confront you face to face. Okay.
I'll just think, wasn't there, Moses had a judgment seat that he would dictate law from among the Israelites? Didn't
that became tradition in Judaism later. It wasn't at this particular point in time, no. They never had a building or a home to have that during his lifetime. Well, that's a statement of cause. Hey, those will sit in Moses' seat. I understand where that tradition comes from. There really was a seat in most synagogues, and the big cheese got to sit in that one. But that's, you know, that's pride of life entering there. I mean,
Moses sits in his seat and nobody gets to sit in it except Moses.
Right.
Yes.
They put the seats in the tombstones also. Those big, big, you know, they had special seats in there so rigor mortis could sit in.
Sorry. I just lost my thought here. Okay, anyway. Now, I want you to pay attention to, if you can, just a minute here. Now, verse 10 says that he is going to repay face to face, right? What does verse 11 say?
Keep them and obey them.
Because if you don't, you face God face to face.
And he deals with you quickly.
That's quickly. He deals with you quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you ever, don't answer this question, please. Just think about it. Have you ever done something that you know is contrary to the statutes and judgments of God and you did it anyway? How quick did you have to pay the consequences?
Immediately. Sometimes fast, sometimes slow.
Actually, it's pretty fast, because once you do, the Spirit of God is no longer protecting you. The elements of the world will be against you. And though you may think you got away with it, you will not get away with it, because it already has been impacted upon you immediately. Once you transgress and go against God's will willingly, there is nothing there to protect you. Not even protect you from the face of God. All right? So it does come quickly, even though we think, oh, I got away with that. No, you didn't get away with it, because already the punishment is already been instilled. All right? Now, sometimes God doesn't chasten as hard as on you, and maybe you think he ought to. Maybe grace to God, blessed you are, that he doesn't punish you as firmly as you would like to be punished or need to be punished. Yes.
Yes, it's kind of interesting in Psalm chapter 50. He talks about the fact that, you know, when you went off and did all these things according to your own will or whatever, and I didn't quickly answer you, you thought that I was just like you.
You know, sometimes when you transgress it, okay, to transgress it, and then you ask a prayer, and no response. Yes.
I almost wonder, like, sometimes, like, if you transgress something in the physical world, the punishment's sometimes quicker than if you transgress something more in the spiritual plane. Like, for example, like, let's say you have a habit, you have a lead foot. So you have a habit of breaking the speed limit all the time. Relatively quickly, the cop is going to catch you and you're going to get a ticket. Pretty quick. But if your transgression is more of a spiritual level, more of the spirit of the law rather than physical law, that might not catch up with you as quickly. Or at least you might not see it catching up
with you. Not see it catching up with you quickly. I'm sorry, what?
Physical consequences might not catch up as quickly.
Yeah, but the spiritual cost is catching up. The price, what's that? The diminishing of the spirit begins to become less protective to you. Now, we're not talking about this. God does wink at minor sins. Oh, if you use the word wink, you know. I caught you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And you straighten yourself out real quick. Yes.
Well, one of the things that it does do is it moves your heart away from the heart of God.
True.
To the point where you delude yourself in thinking, oh, I can go off a little bit and then come back again.
Well, because God always is there, yes.
You get off at a certain point where coming back again, you don't even know the road back anymore.
Don't know the road back, yeah.
And
God's no yo-yo. You can't call upon anytime you want. You can't put him to sleep, you know, around the world. Yes.
You can't just do an incantation.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
It's
not a genie in the bottle.
Yes, genie in the bottle.
But if your heart condemn you, God is greater than your heart.
Yes.
Yeah, that comes into the Passover season.
Repent.
Yeah, that's what he said. The Passover season is entirely different. We have to look at our heart. We have to judge our heart and find out. The only reason your heart would condemn you is because you know something about the statutes and judgments of God. If you don't know them, you won't care.
And that's where God may wink. is it enough?
He's patient. Yes.
I'm applying everything we're saying right now to the believer and unbeliever alike.
Alike. There's no difference.
Right. Except in the perception, because the unbeliever
is deceived, but
is deceived, and they wouldn't be perceptive enough to understand the consequences, right, why they're getting the consequences. They wouldn't be able to track back and say it's because of this.
But you remember what Jesus said? He said, if you don't know, you're still going to be punished.
But
if you do know, and
punished a lot.
You get punished a whole lot.
The truth of the matter is, and in my dealing with young people when I was in England with spiritual matters, and I say in England because the kids there are totally Torahless. They are into sex, drink, you name it, they've done it. But if you start talking righteously about the righteous things of the Lord, and then I would say to them, I don't care whether you believe or not. You wake up in the middle of the night afraid of death and thinking about the things that you've done wrong. Without exception, in every group I was talking to, they went, how do you know? Well, you know, that's the human condition that is built into you, every single one of us. The Torah really is
created.
Whether we choose to do it or not, we know in our hearts we're doing things
wrong. Exactly what Moses says toward the end of his book. Exact same thing Moses said. All right? So you're quoting something Moses said. All right, now let's go on to verse 12 for a moment. When it comes to pass, because you listen to these judgments and keep them to do them, the Lord your God will keep you with the covenant and with the mercy which he swore to your fathers. Oh, that's a blessing, right? The obvious thing is, this is the obvious blessing, because why?
He made a covenant.
No, because you listen to these judgments. When you listen to the judgments of God, what's going to happen to you? He is going to keep the covenant with you. Isn't that fascinating? Now, he just talked about judgments here only. He didn't use the word statutes. He just used the word judgments. And so because you keep them. So a judgment is something that God makes a decision upon. What do? You walk in them. You live in those judgments. And the judgments come out of, as I mentioned the first time I talk about it, we have the statutes and judgments that run together, parallel together, constantly in the Bible. Here he just limited only one in the judgments, which is directly related to that which is written, hacked into stone. All right? And our hearts is like heart of flesh. Remember, he said, calls our heart a heart of stone, and he wants to turn it into a heart of flesh. Guess who's hacking in your heart of stone? The statutes, like she said. There's something built within us. There is a sense that you kind of know, because it's true, that not a human being that doesn't have a sense of knowing what is right and what is wrong, even if they never knew God, it's in them.
Right.
It's the only creature, if I can use that terminology, that God has created that makes us self-aware of who we are. A dog is not self-aware of anything except a dog. He is unaware of anything else. You are fully aware of the dog. You're fully aware of the character of the dog. You're fully aware of the nature of the dog. And you're fully aware of what you could do with that dog. You train that dog to be nice, or you train that dog to be evil. You have that power. You have that authority. Yeah, the jurisdiction. Did you say something?
Romans 1:18, therefore they have no excuse.
Yes.
And Psalms 119.
Yes.
The heavens declare.
The heavens declare. Yes. It's one of my favorite Psalms. All right, now let's go on here now. See if I can't get past this section. I'm not quite sure what time is it, Dave?
It's a little over 2.
Oh, okay. Okay. I find something very fascinating with verse, I want to go to verse 20. Was it 20 or 22? Oh, no, verse 20. I find it very fascinating. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet among them until those who are left who hide themselves from you. Isn't that interesting? Not hide themselves from God, but hide themselves from you. Now, what does that mean?
They duck. In essence, try to remain in the background.
They want basic, yes?
They duck.
They duck.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Okay, listen carefully. Know you not that you will judge angels? You understand what I'm saying so far? Okay. Now, when Jesus said, my judgments are not mine, but they are my Father's. So he walked and lived within the judgments of God. When you, quote, when God brings forth the sons of God and they encompass and take charge of and control of the world, you will carry out the judgment of God. Will you not? That's what you are learning today. If you learn what judgments are, then you can walk in those judgments and you can carry out those judgments. And the judgments of God are right and upright and holy and just and true. All right? We have a symbol here of the house of Israel. And he said, now you are what? A holy people. I've given you the authority to carry out my judgment against those seven nations. Do you understand what's happening here? The Israelite was supposed to carry out the judgment that God said to be carried out. Now, we went to the book of Joshua. And we'll go for the book of Judges. And you find out they didn't quite carry out all those judgments. Okay, remember I said before, he says the judgments. So God brings forth the judgment. We sometimes believe, and this might be true, because a lot of times God has to do it, that God brings forth the judgment. But what does Hebrews say? It's a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. So you want to kind of prevent that. And so what you want to do is fulfill the judgments that God has carried out. And here we have a spiritual concept, the house of Israel, which was holy unto God, entering in, ready to cross that river, go into and pass judgment. Now, we may not like the judgment of God as human beings, but that's not the problem, is it? It's the judgment of God that is more important than our judgment. So when the sons of man or sons of God ready to take over, guess what you'll be doing? If you're out there to judge angels, won't you be out there to judge people? Now, as we learn what judgment is with God, because in this scripture, he also says, I have mercy. What is the weightier matters of the Torah? What is the weightier matters of the Torah?
Justice and mercy.
And faith.
And faith.
Don't forget the last one, the faith. Those that's more important, those are the things that weigh heavy in the Torah and in the statutes of the judgments of God is justice, mercy, and faith. In that order. So you're going to carry out a justice. Now that means if a nation or a city, and name, you remember the name of the one city that said, I'm going to change, don't want to get killed? Nineveh. Judgment is carried out. Oh, he says, okay, I'm not going to carry out the judgment. Why? Because they don't know the right hand from the left hand. They don't understand what's going on. And therefore mercy was granted unto them. So you will have the same way of thinking. But you won't be thinking on a human basis. Because see, your judgments will be judgment which are in the realm of God and not in the realm of human beings. My judgments can be horrible. I made some bad judgments in the past. I instituted some things that were downright harmful to other people. Chapter 8. Be careful to observe. Why? That you may live. And you may increase. There's this careful thing again about what? Now listen, verse 2. The Lord your God led you all the way those 40 years. Why?
To humble you, to test you. And know what was in your heart.
Now, 40 years is a long time, right?
Not so long.
So how long has it been for you?
Long time.
Long time. It's a long time. I mean, the testing of God is going to test you out and to make you become what? Humble. Why? To find out. Humbleness causes you to respond to the commands of God. It will. Have you ever had a hard time in your life? Real difficult time? Who'd you call on? Your mother?
God.
You call upon God. And God's only going to respond if you're humble. And so in order to make you humble, what does it do? He makes you hungry. That'd be said, right?
Hungry.
I made you hungry for 40 years. I made you with very little water, 40 years. And I fed you manna for 40 years. Why? Because I want you to learn something. Those 40 years in the wilderness was for to make them humble and to test them, or I put this in terminology, to try their souls, to try their heart, to see whether or not they would respond to his verbal command, let alone the statutes and judgments. Because later on it says about verse 3. Now this is a statement we know Jesus made, right? When he was tempted by the devil, right? We're very familiar with this one, right? Oh, but he must took it from Moses. And he says here now, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone. 40 years. How long did that manna last? 40 years. How long did it last on a daily basis? Just in the morning. So you got breakfast. You didn't get any lunch. And you didn't get any dinner. You think you got hungry? I think you got hungry. Because he said, I made you hungry. Physically made you hungry. And so you hear about the complaints during the time of their 40 years before, the first part of the wilderness. And you hear about complaining about not having the right kind of food, not this kind of food. They were in hunger. It wasn't that they were fat and jolly, had a lot of food, as much as they want. God took away food from them. 40 years. What did they get to eat instead? Manna. Why? so they will learn that man can only live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. See, manna wasn't a blessing in the sense that, oh, you're hungry. No, I gave you manna, and that's all I gave you. And when you squeal for food, I gave you quail and made you sick. You want to keep on complaining to me? Just eat the manna. Oh, the water didn't taste good? Well, move. I'll move you someplace else. Can we go? It's a wonderful place. No, you can't go. You're going to go to another place. Oh, the water's good there. Okay, now it's good. Now move. Oh, the water's horrible in new places. Okay, move. Oh, good mood. The water again. Oh, hit the rock. All right. God did this to do something that is to humble and to try and put them to a test. Does God test you out? Yes. We have the book of James that tells us that, right? Very plainly. God will test you out. If he doesn't,
he won't know
and we won't know. We won't know why, but the reason why the test that God brings forth to us is that we will learn to live by and walk in the statutes and the judgments, which Moses constantly goes over and over and over again. Verse 5 of chapter 8, interesting statement. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. All right. Why would you chasten your son for?
Teach a lot.
Okay. In your household, and your son goes contrary to what you have commanded him, regardless of the laws of God, what are you going to do?
Just
you're chasing him.
Yeah.
You're going to correct him. All right? That's how God is. And that's what he's stating. And that's why the next statement says, therefore, you should keep the commandments of God. If you don't, guess what? God's going to come up and he's going to say, you didn't do it. I'm going to have to chase you. I'm going to spank you. When God spanks, you know, it's pretty heavy. Sometimes he spanks with 2x4. He spanks where it hurts. You know, he doesn't. I mean, he's a gentle person, but you don't want to have God, you don't want to fall in the hands of the awesome God. You want to be on his side. And so you look at the statutes and the judgments, and I'm going to walk in those statutes. And the judgments in your private life, your private and personal life, must follow line the judgments of God. Not your judgments, but God's. You may think you've got a good judgment, a good judgment. Well, if the judgment does not come from the eternal, then your judgment is of no value. It's constantly monitoring. You know, we should be doing this every day of our life. And this is very important. Verse 10. When you have eaten and are full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he gives you. Okay? Beware, however, that if you forget the Lord your God by what? Not keeping his orders, not keeping his judgments, not keeping statutes. It's going to be bad news for you. We have to kind of, we should walk. Apostle Paul said what? We work out our own salvation with what?
Fear and judgment.
Fear and judgment.
Trembling.
Fear and what?
Trembling. Fear and trembling.
Now, that sounds a weird statement. You know, I'm terrified of God here. That's not what he's referring to. And he says, when you walk into it, you work out your own salvation. I don't work out yours. You don't work out mine. God does not work out yours. How can you be saved out of the tribulation of this world? When you walk in the statutes and the judgments, and it's your decision. It is not God's decision for you to walk in statutes and judgment. It's your decision. That's your responsibility. That's the least part that's required. So yeah. So we look at the laws of God and you say, okay, am I walking into them? And if you're not, you should have fear and move as quick and as fast as you can, right in line with that vision of the judgments, of the statute of the judgments of God. Verse 12, this is one of those things that at least you, if you forget the statutes of judgment, which is verse 11 is about, have eaten and are full and have built a beautiful houses and dwell in them, and your herds and your flock multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, that they are all multiplied, and you forget about the statutes of judgments, then your heart will be lifted up because you have forgotten the statutes and judgments of God, and you will forget. It says right there by itself, the Lord God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, free from bondage. Wealth, prosperity, good times. Helps us to forget. But he says, no, wait a minute, you don't have to. You can have all this as Abraham had it all. But Abraham didn't forget. Abraham didn't forget. And so he's telling this whole group of people who are walking in to promised land. And it's a promised land. Right? By the way, whose job was it to clean up? Whose job was it to clean up? When they crossed that river, whose job was it to clean up? Who? Who?
The Levites?
No. The whole house of Israel's job was to clean up the entire country. Destroy all the idols.
Oh.
Get rid of all the pagan things. Get rid of all those things. And burn them down. That was their job. That was the judgment they're supposed to carry out. Right?
Right.
Right? In your private life, you are the one to carry out the judgments. Don't wait upon God, because God didn't wait upon them. They're supposed to do it. And we know we went to the book of Joshua already. How many times they stumbled? When you go to the book of Judges, you can see them stumble an awful lot, because they didn't carry it out. You know, Daniel said, we're not talking Torah when you're going into the prophets. You're talking those who carried out the statutes and judgments and those who did not carry out the statutes and judgments from that point on. And the end results that takes place. All right? Verse 17. I did it my way. I don't know Frankie. Yes, yes. I did it my way. Well, that's true. He did it his way. However, God says if you say that, guess what he's going to do? He's going to take away all the blessings. He's going to take away all of that ability for you to produce what you can produce. He'll take away every blessing when you have said in your heart. And by the way, God listens to hearts. He's right in them anyway, you know, so he can listen to them. Yes.
Why do they have that capital M?
For my.
And thou say in thine heart, my power.
Oh, it's quoting. If you were writing down a sentence, and you're quoting somebody, Frank said, my, then you have to have a capital M.
So it's not referring to...
No, that's referring to grammar. That's all that there is referring to in your particular translation. Kind of put quotes around it, you know. coat. That's what I'm saying. Verse 19. If you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other Elohim, and serve them and worship them, I will testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. Now this is Moses' words. These are the words of Moses. Once again, why is it important for us to listen to the words of Moses?
Directly to God.
Face to face. And there's nobody else in the history of mankind that's ever had that personal relationship with the Creator other than Moses. He says, I hide nothing from him. I tell him everything. And he was just telling Moses his heart, his soul, and his mind, as well as his power, his speed, as we learn what that word means. Don't hesitate. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and no hesitation. Don't stall. Respond quickly. That's how God is. Remember Jesus gave a parable. Remember what it was about? Had to do with Moses. Lazarus and rich man. Mm-hmm. It had to do with Abraham, right? And Abraham says, I can't come to you. There's a great chasm between you and me. Well, here, Abraham's in life and they're in death. He can't go there. That's the chasm. You're dying. I'm living. I can't possibly go to dying to bring you back because I'm living and you're dead. You're in the process of dying. And the old man, the guy said, wait a minute, what, if I come back from the dead, my brothers will hear me. What did Abraham say? They didn't listen to Moses. They're not going to listen to one who comes back from the dead. Now we're talking Abraham. Abraham, who, by and through the Messiah, we could pretty well see by that statement alone, that Moses is of greater importance than Abraham. So must listen to Moses.
He represents the law.
He represents
the heart of God.
He represents the heart of God. That's what he represents. And when you feel what Abraham didn't represent the heart of God. He was a friend of God.
Right.
It's a little bit different. Yes.
3 minutes.
3 minutes left. That's good. Any questions? Any ideas? Any thoughts?
The last verse in chapter 8 says that, like the nations the Lord destroyed before you, so you will be destroyed for not obeying the Lord your God.
Yeah.
So is that sort of implying that to one degree or another, like for example with the prophets Balaam or even Jonah going to Nineveh, that these other nations had some sort of witness to them as well?
Yes, because we have in the book of Romans, she quoted, they were without excuse. We think they have, they're out, but no, because they did have it. And if you go back in time and history, most of these countries, they go back and find out, they have actually some real history that really tells them about things in the past, but they have deliberately put them aside.
They didn't think the knowledge of God was worthy to retain. Huh?
Yeah, right. So it gave them over to a
reprobate
mind.
Yes.
A mind that has no judgment. That's what reprobate means. No judgment. Void of any judgment.
Or conviction.
Yeah. They can't. They're a lost of what to do. And sometimes you know a friend of yours or acquaintance of yours that their decision in their life and they make the wrong judgment. And the reason why they make the wrong judgment is because they don't have the judgments of God. And you can't have the judgments of God unless you know the statutes of God. Ellie.
I think that's one of the reasons that when God calls the lesser of people, and we're just us, and we aren't really brilliant, everything, and yet we have the confidence to live confidently. And all those educated people that are really, really so smart that can't figure out confidently how to put anything together, that it's odd for us to have the confidence to live because of God's
judgments. Yeah, we have hope.
We have God's judgments.
We have the judgments. Okay, if that's it.
What was the Torah prayer you were talking about?
What was the what?
The Torah prayer?
Oh. There's a prayer beginning in Hebrew in the Torah prayer. Elvin's up and use the words they use is statutes and judgments when you start doing the Torah. And they use those words are so used in especially the book of Deuteronomy that it's overwhelming. That's why they use those in the beginning of their opening of their prayer. Okay?